Watch on Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Oh my goodness, where did the week go? If it's Friday already, 9 minutes after the hour. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good weather today, but rain for the weekend.
Yes, well, you got to take a little the rain with the sunshine.
We don't have a lot of choice. Exactly right.
No,
it's going to be fine. I actually think tomorrow, the forecast I heard this morning, you might get away with being outdoors and do things Sunday. More problematic.
Yeah, well, we're coming to the end of the school season, and you have with you this morning Jeannie Mulgrave, Commissioner for Youth and Community Development. Summer jobs.
One of the hardest working people in our administration. Our whole business strategy is overwork.
He doesn't say that about everybody, right.
Thank you.
Our whole business strategy is overworking and underpaying Jeannie Mulgrave. That's the way we're going to balance our budget.
She's nodding her head.
No, one of our problems is that, you know, we have these programs to find jobs, summer jobs for kids. And early work experience really is a great benefit to young people, and the kids that do work do much better in school, and lots of different things. The problem is, while we didn't cut any the funding for the program, the state severely cut the funding, and a one-time federal stimulus money that we had was turned out to be one time. So what Jeannie's done is launched a public-private partnership to try to get private monies to help pay for the summer jobs for thousands of kids. We think we're the first such effort in the country. You know, people say you got to do more with less. Well, that's what she's trying to do. And this is a program that's gone on for 50 years. It's just helped generations of New Yorkers and get their first paid employment. And
nothing better than a paycheck, no matter how big or small it might be, right?
And so, you know, she's got some generous people to give some money, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and Bloomingdale's and CVS and a whole list of people here, West Harlem Local Development Corporation, the Tishmans, Abney, et cetera, Hudson Square Connection, Lyndon, Alsher, and Kaplan, Madison Square Garden, Maximus, Primatic Development, Tishman Speyer, Verizon, I didn't want them, Kingdom Capital Management, American Airlines, if I can get them, Empire State Building.
So where do the jobs come from? You've got the money to pay. Are those companies hiring people? Is that how it works?
Some of those companies are hiring people. In fact, Bloomingdale's and CVS has always benefited from subsidized jobs, and we're so pleased that they are stepping up and able to now contribute to that government-run program. Our community-based organizations identify positions and workplaces.
Nonprofits and things.
Nonprofits identify them in the community. So it could be local businesses that need a little extra help. It could be retail outlets, museums, libraries, our parks, a real, you know, variety of places. 40% of our young people are in day camps. And so with a decline in the number of jobs, we are concerned that working parents may not have the resources that they need if we don't have a robust summer youth employment program.
Okay, now if there is a parent that is listening here this morning to us, and they've got a child that they would like to see have a job, how do they get in touch with you? What's the process?
Our application is online, and when I checked today, we have over 80,000 young people.
Wow.
Who have applied online, and so that's really the concern.
A lot of kids need jobs, and a lot of kids in the city. All our problems and programs are big.
It's just amazing. 80,000 kids.
I mean, president of Mexico was in the office the other day, Calderon, who is just, this is a tough guy. He's got a very tough road to hoe to get Mexico through the drug problems. But we talked about the size of problems because Mexico has, you know, Mexico City is even much bigger than New York City, even the metropolitan area. And if you're going to help people, you got to do it big scale. It takes lots of resources, lots of management, people like Jeannie.
And lots of people to help.
So unfortunately, we only have about 23,000 spots, and the application period doesn't end till May 27th. So we're really on track to have about 200,000 kids apply last year.
Off the list.
By lottery. That's really the only fair way to do it. Last year, we had about 143,000, and we know we'll be up from last year. And so we're making every effort to have as many young people work this summer as possible.
Now, let me ask you the other question. If there are other organizations besides the ones the mayor read off that would like to get involved, again, contact you through.
We know that New Yorkers are generous, and so they should call 311. They can go to nyc.gov and look up the Mayor's Fund and look up Department of Youth and Community Development. We're the last on the list. youth. and contribute. We need all... an individual can spend $1,500 and have a seven-week job for a kid over the summer.
Well, that's a good
or
idea.
We can have organizations step up. And we're so pleased to have about 18 groups already say yes, and the list is in formation.
Let me ask a nuts and bolts kind of question, that if an individual wanted to donate $1,500, is that tax deductible? Is it
sure.
A, yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's yep. a non-profit. The Mayor's Fund is a non-profit organization that works with the city on fundraising.
All right. There you go. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I wish the kids the best of luck.
Thank you.
You know, I was talking about this program to David Rockefeller. Generous guy. You know, he's in his mid-90s. And we talked about how you help kids. And I watched his eyes light up when I described the program, and he came through.
I was going to say, did he write it? Did the check follow?
You do not have to worry about his philanthropy. He is a very generous guy and a very caring guy.
All right. Well, listen, Jeannie, good luck to you and your staff, and you got a lot of work ahead of you over the next 4 weeks, right, to get everything done.
We do. The program starts July 5th.
July 5th. All right. Thanks for coming in today. Good to see you.
Thank you
very much. Why don't I take a break right here, Mr. Mayor, and when we come back, we'll get into things, and we will get into your questions. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. Again, a reminder, if you want to get in line, 800-321-0710. Talk with Mike Vigliola, to get up with your question for the mayor in just a little bit. All right, these two guys that NYPD nailed out in Queens that were looking for guns and bombs and all kinds of stuff.
Well, number one, the death of Osama bin Laden certainly does not end threats to free people every place in the world. There were 80 people killed in a bombing this morning.
Pakistan, yeah.
You know, they're going to get even for the killing of Osama bin Laden. This was not exactly that. This was two rogue guys freelancing, not with any contacts with anybody else. For 7 months, our undercover operation led to their
that
arrest.
Long.
You know, number one, you have to comply with the law and civil liberties and that sort of stuff. Number two, you don't, if you knew who the bad guys were and what they were going to do, you just arrest them. I mean, it's finding and tracking and making sure you have the right person. We have 1,000 of our best police officers assigned to counterterrorism and intelligence duties. We've thwarted 13 different plots since 9/11. The Manhattan DA, Cy Vance, is... I think he's turning out, he's going to be one of the spectacular district attorneys this city has ever had. He is charged these two guys with conspiracy in the second degree as a crime of terrorism. Carries a maximum term of life in prison without parole. Probably not gets anything like that. We did arrest him for purchasing 3 guns from undercover operation, undercover cops. Some ammunition, a grenade. They went on and on talking about they're targeting synagogues and going to kill Jews. And some on the radio I heard that they said take down the Empire State Building. You know, the bottom line is, are you safe today in big cities? And I can only speak for New York. My test always is, I say to the commissioner, police commissioner, would you let your son work in that building, walk on that street, take that train? And if the answer is yes, then I'm going to let my daughters do that. Nobody can guarantee 100% security, but you are probably as safe, if not safer, in New York City than any place else. Why? Well, we spend an enormous amount of money and have an enormous number of cops and others to make sure that we do everything you can to stop terrorists. They will always be rogue people, and maybe.
As we saw last weekend with the kid, with the guy that walked through the path tunnel over to New Jersey, and the 4 guys that got into the subway.
That was just that's just stupid, you know.
Yeah, but they were caught. The thing you have to remember that they were caught.
They were caught, and you know when you have big systems, there's always a ways to. The question is, do we catch them? And you're right, that's exactly what happened. But the announcement yesterday of these two guys getting arrested, I think they actually were arrested the day before. The day before, there was also a cop was selling a gun, as an undercover cop, to arrest two guys, and one of them went after him, and the cop had to shoot him. Fortunately, the police officer was uninjured. One perp arrested, one perp dead. Recovered, they had a gun, recovered it. But, you know, it's the undercover cops. People talk about what kind of security you have in the city. This handful of cops that I know are undercover because they're, you know, around City Hall and that sort of thing. And I see them and I think to myself, there's nobody in a million years that would have thought that that guy...
That's what they do.
I mean, and some of them, you see them, they look like your description of a terrorist, and others, your description of a Wall Street banker, and everything between. So you never know who's that person sitting next to you.
And I think that it's generally...
Do you remember the old movie Taking a Pelham 123?
Sure, of course.
And the last thing, the guy, the most unlikely guy in the subway train...
Turns out to be an undercover cop.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's generally acknowledged that New York City's anti-terror group is as good as anything, maybe even as good as the FBI.
Yeah, but, well, look, they all work together. When people say, oh, it's a battle of the badges, that's not true. Cops and firefighters work together hundreds of times a day, from the very top to the very bottom. But also we work with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, the FBI, and all the other intelligence agencies, not just in the federal government, but at the state level, and at the surrounding states, and other cities, and other countries. Remember, New York City has police officers stationed at, I don't know, a dozen different cities around the world to get best practices when there's a terrorist event or an attack there or an attempt, hopefully foiled. We look to see what they were trying to do, and because the same thing they may try here.
I'm not going to say where this was, but I happened to be standing at a place earlier this week when two what turned out to be police officers, they were dressed in suits, detectives probably, actually came to this place and were talking with the operator and said, we're with the anti-terrorist group. And we just want to talk with you because of your location and this, that. And I was very impressed to kind of half listen into the conversation about what they were doing. And what they were doing is just alerting this person to alert them in the case of whatever.
I describe, everybody talks about first responders. To me, that's second. It's first preventers. And if you think about it, the cops do that. Try to get you before you commit a crime. Fire department does that. The fire department does an enormous number of inspections and educational programs to prevent fires. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they never had to go to a fire? That's not going to happen. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the cops never had to arrest anybody? Not going to get there. But, you know, those are nice objectives to have. And then, of course, somebody's going to write, oh, you didn't accomplish it. You said it was your goal. Yeah, it is our goal, and we're not going to get there.
Exactly. Different subject here. You and the governor... I'm not sure exactly what you did. That's what my question is. There was a threatened, or maybe not even threatened, but there's going to be a rate hike, electric rate hike. And you and the governor got something through where you gave permanent tax breaks to the electric generation companies,
you know,
to prevent the hike.
It cost a lot of money to generate and distribute electricity. On the other hand, people don't need another expense, particularly now. And so this is one thing. But more importantly is the governor and the state bureaucracy and the mayor and the city's bureaucracy try to work to find ways so we use less energy. And in New York City, Plan YC, we have the volunteers help paint roofs white, reflects the heat. You can reduce the amount of energy in a building by 20-25% just by painting the roof white. If it's the right height building, 4 or 5 story building, we'll do exactly that. Getting people to use more fuel efficient cars or take mass transit. It's those kinds of things. But in the end, the companies that generate and the typically different companies, Con Ed, for example, doesn't generate any electricity. They just
Correct.
Used to. Today they're a distributor. Right. They sold off all of their plants. Right. It's trying to get them to operate as efficiently as they can. And keep in mind, in this city, in this state, we tax an enormous number, enormous amount of energy. If you look at your electric bill, there's a lot of taxes.
A lot of taxes for all kinds of things.
Yeah, same thing with telephones. I mean, it's a ways that the state, or I'm not walking with the city, but everybody uses to sort of hide the taxes. That they pay, but you know we're going to try to keep this city and the state As affordable as possible to people and to companies.
Wasn't this a result, however, of that sort of seemingly crazy law to me, a layperson, where the generators, the electric generators, are guaranteed a certain return? And that's where the hike was coming from?
Well,
it goes up. If it goes up, they give you money back, supposedly.
Okay.
If it goes down,
the problem is that if you've got to get somebody to invest in a big plant, unless you can guarantee them a return, nobody's going to put the money up.
I understand.
So it's not necessarily a bad idea. You can make the case that if the price of oil were fixed at a given level, then people would try to invest more in reducing consumption because they know that the plant they build or the product they sell will last for a very long time.
So. Yeah. Okay. So it's really a balancing. You can't make it get any cheaper.
There's no free lunch.
There's no free lunch. Exactly.
They've got to have a return. But you want to try to keep it as affordable as possible.
All right. Hang on. All right, John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We are looking for you at 1-800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. If you have a question for the mayor, yesterday demonstrations of various ilk, 8 of them around the city, I understand. They ended up on your porch at City Hall and then marched on down here, whether it's teacher layoffs, living wage, there were other issues, as firehouses. Your reaction to the noise?
And yet most people are happy. You know, the city goes on. Our municipal workforce provides great services. You turn the tap, the water comes out. You throw the switch, the light goes on. Crime at record lows. Traffic deaths at record lows. Fire deaths at record lows. Schools, the president, secretary of education says we're the role model. We must be doing something right.
Well, yeah, and again, you've got you're absolutely right, but at the same time, you've got the budgetary issues that you and I have spent the last couple of years talking about, and yet we have people screaming all day yesterday, or much of yesterday, about wanting more money, more money, more money, and then you look at the Marist poll that was printed this morning, published this morning, that, you know, there's 37% of people under 30 are thinking of leaving.
Well, half the people in the country get some kind of federal help, although a lot of that's Medicare and Medicaid.
New Yorkers get the largest number, I heard, $9,000 on average.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah. It's, you know, the state, the federal government and the state government and the city government all have their own requirements to balance the budget. The federal government can print money. State has to have a balanced budget, but they run it on a cash basis. So if the last month they don't send out checks to people that they owe money to, it doesn't count as an expense. The city has to balance its budget on an accrual basis, which means whether you send out the check or not, it's an expense. And it's a much more rigorous standard. It comes out of the 1970s when the city got into financial crisis. They agreed to a much more stringent accounting system, which has really kept this city on the straight and narrow. It was actually whoever forced that on the city made the right decision. When the federal government cuts back and the state government cuts back, we can only make up for some of it. For a number of years, we put a lot of money aside, knowing that there'd be days when we didn't have enough. And we, for this coming budget, are using up 2/3 of our entire reserve, which only leaves 1/3 for the next year. And next year may very well be worse than this coming year, the year after. So we are trying to find ways to do more with less. You know, I keep saying, we start saying, what do you got to do? And then figure out a ways to do it, and then a ways to pay for it. But for example, with policing, we are going to get the equipment and the cops and the training that we need. You can never have enough, but practical enough to keep this city safe. And then I'm going to have to figure out a ways to pay for it. You don't do it in the other direction. The state cut back, the state Medicaid program cutbacks hurt this city to a couple of billion dollars. And then there's a couple of billion match from the federal government we don't get. When you add up all of the changes in the state legislature's budget, what the state Assembly and Senate passed and the governor signed, is a, something like a $6 billion impact on New York City. Direct cuts, a little over $1 billion. The governor's budget, which was adopted by the legislature, cuts $800 million from education. The federal government, no more stimulus money. That was $850 million for education. We put over $2 billion more of city taxpayer dollars into education this year. And it still isn't enough. We just still have to, we still have a system. We are spending double what they spend in almost every other place in the country.
6,100 teachers still on the block?
We have to have fewer. We just, the government is hiring people to provide a service and paying those people. That's where your tax dollars go. And we just don't have enough money
to keep a workforce
the size that we have.
Don't you have to start sending out notices? I mean, we're getting at the end of the school year.
You certainly would want to do that before the end of the year. But one of the reasons we have this large number is last year when every other agency took a cut, it was in November, and I didn't want to cut back anything in education in the middle of a school year, which was last November. So this is a buildup of that sharing the pain, and next year is sharing the pain. The average city agency, since 2002 when we came into office, we spend 28% more than we did back then. Inflation is 33% during that period, so we've spent less than inflation would have had you to keep it constant, and actually less. Education's up 105%. All the other agencies together are up 28%. The biggest costs we have are education, and $22 billion is our education bill. And the other thing that's big is pensions, up 515% in 10 years. Those are the two things. That's where all the money goes. And that's where the state has not changed all these mandates. They keep voting these pension benefits. People say it's the stock market. If you look at it, it's not the stock market and the pension system. They say it's higher wages marginally makes a difference. The real answer is the state keeps voting more pension benefits. Our pension costs have gone up from $1.5 to $8.5 billion, $7 billion more.
This comes back to the Marist poll. I mean, you know, people are just saying, come on, you're killing me here. And I don't mean you personally, but the state.
It was interesting. There was the demonstrations yesterday. I haven't read the articles in the paper, but it'd be fascinating to see how many state legislators were there yelling and screaming, given they approved the budget. And for local officials, you know, they're complaining. I didn't see a lot of them helping us up in Albany, yelling and screaming to have our cutbacks at least not be disproportionate. We don't like any cutbacks. So I'm sympathetic with the governor. He has got to cut the budget. They had a $10 billion deficit. I just keep arguing two things. One, we shouldn't be cut any more than anybody else proportionally. And in fact, for revenue sharing, we were cut 100%. Everybody else cut 3%. Out of the $6.5-7 billion, I think it was, that the state budget cuts of monies they send back to the counties. There are 62 counties. We're five of them. Our five took $3.5 billion. The rest of the state took three. It's just not fair. The other thing is there are a lot of these mandates we're required to do things. Our cost of education is going to go up $500 million next year just because of mandated things. And if the state didn't make us do that, we wouldn't have the budget problem we have. So if you say, well, you know, you're going to have to downsize your workforce, talk to the state and say, well, you know, help the city reduce its expenses. It's not going to cost the state anything. It's just they wanted to please somebody, so they pass a law saying, here, look, I got this for you. But the city taxpayer's got to pay, and the city worker is going to suffer because of that. These unions should be up there screaming at Albany, you're cutting the ability for the city to run efficiently and to give us stable jobs and to provide good services. And most of the municipal workforce lives here, too, so it's their tax dollars as well.
When you look at that and you see what's going on here, education, the reason education becomes sort of the focal point of a lot of this, not just here in the city of New York, but in Wisconsin and other places that we have seen demonstrated, is because the cost of education, as you just pointed out, fascinating, that other agencies' expenses have gone up 28% and education has gone up 105%.
That's correct. But it's fascinating. Everybody talks about Wisconsin and they say, oh, oh, it's this right-wing Republican state. Number one, I think Wisconsin's pretty much evenly split between Republicans and Democrats at the moment. The Republicans are in power. But in two states, Illinois and Massachusetts, excuse me, overwhelmingly Democratic states, at least one house of the legislature in both those places have voted bills to just cut dramatically the pension system for the municipal employees. So this is not a Republican thing or a Democratic thing. This is the state legislatures, and I don't know where ours is yet, but the state legislatures all of a sudden realizing the taxpayers aren't going to pay anymore. They can't afford the things that they already voted. They want to roll them back.
All right, different subject here. Taxis, out of Manhattan taxis. I know that the city council has voted to increase the fines for yellows not going to the outer boroughs. And you've also proposed the fact of maybe coming up with a second kind of medallion.
Well, David Yeske, the Traffic and Limousine Commissioner, absolutely. In all fairness, outside of Midtown Manhattan, it's not just Manhattan, but it's Midtown Downtown, the density is a lot less, so a cab driver is a lot less likely to get a fare if he or she spends their time just driving up and down the street looking to be hailed, which is, and in all fairness, if there was a lot of business in one small area, the cabs would go there. But we're trying to solve that problem. At the same time, we are not going to tolerate a cab turning you down when you get in and say, I want to go to some place that they don't want to take you to. In the new cabs, the cab of the future, it's got a GPS. So when the cab driver says, I don't know where that is, you say, here, I'll tell you. I can see it on my map. I'm sitting in the back seat with a map. So, you know, or you could do that right now. You can Google Maps on most smartphones. Pull it out and say, driver, I'll tell you where to go. Just plug it in.
Now, if indeed there is a second medallion, an out-of-Manhattan medallion that is issued, and you go down that route, what happens with the black cars that cruise out there as it is?
Well, you know, there's no simple, you say, oh, you fix the taxis, you know what to do. There are all sorts of different level taxis. There are those who legitimately can be dispatched via radio. There are those who are just rogue and go out. There are those that don't pass safety tests. And incidentally, it's a big jobs creation program, so you could cut a whole bunch of them out and put a lot of people on the street. You don't want to do that either. So it's trying to find some balance, working with the taxi industry, working with those black cars, have a representative, and so we're trying to find some balance. And we haven't gotten there yet, but we are getting closer, I think, in all fairness, to coming up with an agreement which may be selling a different kind of medallion, which would give the city some one-time revenue. But, you know, then once they have a medallion and it goes up in value, then people say, oh, you can't do anything to hurt the value of that. But it was a license given to you by the city. I've never understood why we sell medallions and then
a marketplace is out
market.
There.
Yeah, I mean, we should rent them and still own them, but we don't.
Yeah, that goes back to a lot of history, would be my guess.
Decades.
Decades, indeed.
Probably horse-drawn taxis had the same deal.
I'm sure they probably did. Speaking of transportation around the city, there was an article this week about a GPS system that is being discussed about giving people in cars real-time traffic information. And that it would also could be used to kind of track mileage and things of that nature, lower insurance rates.
Well, there's lots of things. I mean, yeah, Google Maps gives you traffic, and when I'm in the car, you know, driver's using it all the time, and it's accurate because it's done by computers. It's done by computers, or the cameras that the computer reads, or sensors, and it gets reported and gets sent right out. This is the kind of thing, John, that everybody's going to have, and it's all going to do lots of things for you. Reduce the traffic, reduce the time it takes, which is reducing the amount of gasoline you have to buy and all that sort of stuff.
All right,
and, you know, you can see it notifying the person you're going to go see that you're 5 minutes late,
right,
and giving them a countdown. Do you want them to know where you are? You say, I'm 5 minutes out. Well, maybe you haven't even left yet, but I'm not so sure you want them to be.
Well,
that's always the thing. All these things sound nice, but do you really want somebody to be able to?
Now you're gonna hate me for this question,
sure.
But it wouldn't be the first time.
Absolutely.
When you were announcing the emergency broadcast notification system that the federal government is implementing, and you're in lockstep with, my question to you is, what are you going to say?
Well, I said that in
did
the...
Did you? I didn't
yeah,
hear your
no,
speech.
I,
what would you say?
In the Q&A afterwards. Well, number one, I think it's only a federal official, the president or whomever he delegates, that can say anything. And what do you say?
Oh, it is. It's not the mayor. You don't. I know you have radio capability.
Yeah, but it may get there. But I think this is the way it works.
Okay.
But whether it's the mayor or the president, there is the issue. There's been a threat. You want people to start panicking and run? No. But if you don't tell them, you're going to get sued if, God forbid, something happens. In all of these big problems, it's establishing the facts that are the toughest thing, and then how do you phrase it? I can tell you how to solve the problem of education. If you can explain to me exactly why each student is doing well or not doing well, that's the hard thing. It's very hard to tell. And a student that does it well one day and doesn't do it well the next day, maybe they're tired, who knows, the question's just different, random, you don't know. And so that's the hard part.
So does this emergency notification system create more problems than it solves?
I think it is a great technology to have, and then we're going to have to address the issue that you raised and figure it out. But if you don't have the technology, you can't do it. But it would be great if there is a really serious thing to be able to say something. The people always use the World Trade Center disaster as an example. The cell phones didn't work. Well, the cell phones did work. They just got so overloaded that they couldn't handle it. This technology would let the government send out a message that would override all those things. So you would not have that kind of congestion. But it's a good question. What would you do? What message should the federal government send out after the first plane went into the first building?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Nobody, at that point, nobody could be sure whether it was terrorism or an accident.
And even after the second plane.
And, well, by that time, you probably thought it was terrorism, but nobody thought the buildings were going to come down. And what do you tell people to do? Run? Run where?
And there's no way to localize the information.
That's the nice thing about this
technology.
You could
localize?
Sure, because they'll just send out from cell towers in the area that they want to get it. But then the question is, well, I was over in New Jersey, or I was uptown, or I was in Brooklyn, why didn't you tell me what was going on downtown? But then you could have different messages for different people. In Lower Manhattan, move to the sidelines. In New Jersey, don't worry, it's not there. But then, of course, if there was another terrorist attack over there, you've given people false information, and then the second guessing as to why didn't you tell them, and everybody is out there criticizing. You know, I've always said, supposing they scrambled some jets to, you shoot down, you've got a passenger plane, 250 people, terrorists take it over, you call in
the... It's a hypothetical, by the way.
Call in the Air National Guard, what do you do?
Right. I don't know what you do.
Oh, that's...
That was my question.
But that's why you got to, you know, second-guessing the president, whomever the president is, or the governor, whoever the governor is, or the mayor, it's cute, but it's not productive, and I don't know how you do it better.
As you and I have discussed, how if you had to evacuate the city, even a small portion of the city of New York, where would you go?
Try on a Friday night when it's raining.
Or last night. I mean, any night.
Right. I mean, you know, it's not easy. I'll give you another hypothetical. Supposing there's a communicable disease and you don't want people to leave because they'd spread it.
That's true. Exactly.
What are you going to do? Keep people from leaving?
Right.
How do you do that?
Stop.
I mean, but these are the kind of things that the Office of Emergency Management and the police and fire wrestle with all the time. They sit around and they try to figure out what could you do. Nobody knows what the actual disaster is going to be, but the exercise of working together and addressing problems and coming up with solutions that are practical is exactly why we are better prepared. Are we prepared for everything? Of course not.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We got some... All right, Mr. Mayor, here we go. A couple of more minutes left. It's time for the telephones, and let's go to... We got Liz in Babylon. Hello, Liz in Babylon.
How are you? Good morning.
You've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. Just really concerned about the Bronx Zoo and the budget cuts doesn't happen. It said 50% is going to be cut from the zoo. So what's the outcome of the animals and what's going to happen to the zoo?
Well,
more escapees.
Escapees. I think the peacock, or actually I think it was a peahen, probably didn't listen to your show and probably doesn't read the newspaper every day, so wouldn't know about the budget cuts. So that's not why that bird was fleeing. And I might point out the snake Never left.
Never left.
He's very happy there.
He's out of the cage, though.
Yeah, but he's out of the cage, but he was relaxing and enjoying the Bronx Zoo. Liz, all kidding aside, there's just not enough money to do everything, and the zoo is it's one of the great zoos in the world. And not only that, the parent organization does an awful lot to save animals around the world. And they've just got to keep raising money, and we'll try to do as much as we can to help them. But the reality is we can't do everything, and you have to set some priorities. And, you know, let's assume there are only two things, providing protection against terrorists and street crime on one hand, or more money for the zoo on the other.
You're not going to
eliminate... The zoo's going to be open fewer hours.
You're not going to eliminate a penguin from the Central Park Zoo, are you?
Well, it's up to the Bronx Zoological Society, but I suspect not.
All right. Let's see here. Mario in New Jersey. You've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Good, Mario.
I wanted to get your opinion. I really believe that the reason why all of these... You're facing this dilemma of these budget cuts is that the pension beast is at your door, and nothing is being done about it. I'd like to make a suggestion as a businessman. I was looking at some of the numbers on your pension plan, only because I'm interested in it, and it's probably well-funded for 10 years. Why not suspend contributions to the pension plan?
That's what they do in New Jersey. That's what they've done. that doesn't get you to a better place.
I mean, the trouble, number one, Mario, the law requires us to make pension contributions. And this year, as a matter of fact, while our pension costs have been going up $500 million every year because it is a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution plan, this year it's going up $1.5 billion. Why the extra billion? Because the actuary is reducing the assumed return from, I think it's 8% to 7.5%, and the law says we have to make that up right away, the instant that North does it. North's the name of the actuary. There are pension costs get also influenced by the stock market going up and down, but the stock market going up and down gets phased in over 7 years. So if you look at the big decline from 07 and 08, the first year, it doesn't cost you anything. The second year, it's a small amount. By the third, fourth, fifth year, it starts to grow. But by that time, the recovery, remember, the stock market went way down. It's come back virtually all. It's not back to where it was originally, but most of the big decline has been erased. So that's the plus side's getting phased in at the same time the downside's getting phased in, and that smooths it all out. And that's why our increase in pension costs, which some people blame on the stock market, it's just ridiculous. That's not the case. It doesn't help when it goes down, and it doesn't help when it does help when it comes up. But the bottom line is it's that we have to pay more for benefits which are required by the state. And if the state wants to do something about it, and the governor's got the same thing, the state legislature has to change the pension system. And some things they have can do, some things on the state constitution they can't do. They can certainly do it for people later on that haven't joined the system yet.
You got a fast tweet there?
Somebody wants to know why the horns of the driving people crazy, the taxis. The new taxi of tomorrow has a light on it. When you hit the horn, the light on the roof goes off. Because right now, when you have horns in traffic...
I wasn't me. It was the other guy.
Right, exactly right. This would solve that problem.
Well, I'm glad you got the big problems figured out.
You know, big and small. We work on them all.
Mr. Mayor, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
See you next week.
All right, I hope so. Yes, it-